Fishing has traditionally been a male-dominated profession, although in the last two decades, women have joined the ranks of fishing boat crews and even become fishing boat captains themselves. However, women have been involved with the fishing industry for generations as the mothers, daughters, and wives of fishermen. As part of their Portholes project, the Working Waterfront Festival in New Bedford is focusing programs this month on women in the fishing industry. Joining us to talk about this month's programs is Laura Orleans, folklorist and festival director. Good morning.
Good morning, Mindy.
Also, Kirsten Bendix, who's a festival associate director and a fisherman's wife. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Ellen Score, daughter, wife, mother, and grandmother of scallop fishermen. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
All right. Many listeners will be familiar with the Working Waterfront Festival. We talk about it every year, Laura. It takes place in September, brings together all aspects of the fishing industry. We have fishermen, scientists, musicians, just to name a few. Includes demonstrations, lectures, performances. The festival has really kind of grown into almost this year-round project, and you're offering a monthly series of programs called Portholes Project. So tell us a little bit more about what the project is and some of the highlights of this month.
Sure. This is actually going to be the 10th Working Waterfront Festival, and so we felt that it was time to look back over the 10 years and think about the many different themes and issues that we've brought up through the festival. We chose the name Portholes because a porthole is a window, and I thought it was a good symbol of sort of looking into the industry and also kind of looking out from within. And the idea is to bring fishermen and the general public together to explore a variety of topics. So each month, it was going to be one or two programs, and it seems that we keep doing there three or more every month. So it's been very exciting. And this month of March, being Women's History Month, we thought it would be appropriate to look at women in the industry, which was the festival theme back in 2007.
Mm-hmm. So some of the highlights this month, we have
three programs that we're offering. The first is on March 8th, and that's really the one we're going to focus on today. Ellen, who's one of our guests today, is one of four women who will participate in this program, which is going to take place at the Zeiterion Performing Arts Center in New Bedford at 7 p.m. on March 8th. And it's called Mothers, Daughters, Wives, Songs, Stories, and Poems from Women in Fishing Families. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much what it says.
Right.
But, you know, looking at the perspective of those experiences through the arts, really. And then on March 15th, as part of our regular monthly film series called Documentaries, which has been folded into the Portholes Project, we're showing a film called Shipping Out, The Story of America's Seafaring Women, which looks at women's roles as pilot boat operators, tugboat operators, mostly out on the West Coast. It's a great film. It was screened originally on PBS. Maria Brooks, I believe, is the director. And we'll have a panel of some local women who work in the fishing industry in the New Bedford area following the film to talk a little bit about their experiences. And then the last thing that we're doing this month is Linda Greenlaw, who I'm assuming many of your listeners know. She's a sword fishing captain and a New York Times bestselling author multiple times. Was made famous when the Perfect Storm movie came out. She's the female captain on the Hannah Bowden, which was the sister ship to the Andrea Gale. And so she has a new book coming out, which is actually not a fishing book per se. It's called Life-Saving Lessons, Notes from an Accidental Mother. And it's a true life, sort of a memoir about her experiences raising a troubled teenage girl on the island Islaho in Maine, which is a tiny little island. And it's fairly fishy, even though it's not a fishing book. But it's interesting. And, you know, she's, I think, an interesting figure in the fishing world because she's a woman and a captain, but doesn't really count gender as something that's very significant, I think, in her work life.
Got a good lineup there. And of course, so as you mentioned, we're going to be looking at various roles of women in the industry. But today, we're focusing on the perspective of the mothers, daughters, and wives of fishermen. So depending on the fishery, fishermen can be gone days, weeks, or even months, which means all the day-to-day activities of keeping a home and being a parent fall to the woman left behind. So Kirsten and Ellen, both of you are married to fishermen. You're also mothers. Ellen, your children are now grown. We mentioned you have grandchildren now who are fishing. Can each of you describe how your role as a parent changes when your husband goes to sea? Who wants to start? Ellen, you want to start with that?
Yeah, that's fine. Well, you have to take care of everything. You are responsible for whatever happens. If you need a plumber, you call a plumber. If you need groceries, you go to the grocery store. If your children needs to be talked to, you do it right then and there. You don't wait until their father comes home.
There's no wait till dad gets home.
No, that doesn't work. I didn't think that I was in charge of the house, more or less. I I was born a fisherman's daughter too. Mm. So my mother was a very strong woman. And she was the disciplinarian. And it was the same thing when my father came home. It was, he was Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. I never asked my mother for anything. I asked my father, yeah. Because then I got yes.
Because he felt guilty about being away so much, right?
Yeah, and the same thing happened with us as a family. Yeah. When my husband came home, it was Santa Claus. I was the mean one. I was the disciplinarian. But that has to happen.
Right. Kristen, the same for you?
Same thing, yeah. It you do have to take care of everything, and it's true. You have to be the disciplinarian. Mm-hmm. And then when they come home, you don't even want to bother them with anything that's happened. You just kind of are glad they're home, and they need their rest, and they have to go down to the boat and still work the days they're in if you own your own boat. And so it's kind of like you don't bring the problems to them. You just...
That's a lot of responsibility.
It is.
So sort of along with like being a single parent, you also take on the responsibilities of managing the household. And I'm sure there are many women who are listening, both single and married, who also single-handedly manage the household and can relate to this. But I imagine you become well-versed in taking care of all kinds of different things. As you're saying, you don't have that other person to kind of go to. So does it make you more self-sufficient and independent, do you think?
It does, definitely. I was just thinking as you were speaking, I can remember mowing the lawn and the kids would take a nap and I'd run out in the backyard and start to mow and run in and check on them and then go out in the yard and mow again. Well, usually the husbands do the mowing, correct?
Right.
And the shoveling and all of it. And you just don't think. You just do it. And and then when you have them around, it's almost like you still keep doing it.
You forget they're home.
You put out the garbage. You know, you don't tell them to do it. But
yeah. Did you ever realize, Kirsten, that we spoiled them? That's what we did, you know. Because we were, with them being so short time home and being that they were going to spend time with our children or whatnot, I used to have everything ready before he got home, so we didn't have to do anything. Yeah. And in later years, when he now is home, he's retired, I say to myself, I spoiled you what?
So true. So it only in the last decade or so has the communication with those at sea been made easier with cell phones and newer technology. But before that, you couldn't call to ask how to restart the pilot light in the furnace or for an emergency. Even if something was happening up there, there wasn't that connection to know what's going on. So describe communication between shore and fishing vessels before cell phones and what that was like for you.
What happened was before cell phones and emails and all that, we had a ship to shore operator, and we would have to call that operator and say that we needed to reach the fishing vessel Moby Dick, for instance. My husband was on that for a while, and then she would take your number, and she would try to reach the vessel. And when she reached the vessel, you never knew if it was going to be that day or the next day or 12 o'clock at night. You didn't know, so you kind of hang around, and then you'd get your phone call back and she'd say, this is the marine operator. I have your fishing vessel Moby Dick on the line. So then you talk to him. But now you had to watch everything you said because everyone was listening. Mm-hmm. And you had to say over, which I had a hard time getting used to. Right. Yeah. So you'd have to say, hi, how's everything going? Over. And you only called if it was a real emergency or something.
Right. Yeah.
But one story I know, Laura, I always feel like I say this all the time, but when our second child was born, our first son, Radar was supposed to be home. Yeah, he was going out, and I had been to the doctor, and they said, yes, you'll go another week. Well, that night, the next morning, I woke up, and I went, uh-oh. So I showered, and I drove myself to the doctor, and he checked me out and said, get to the hospital. So I drove myself to the hospital, and then after I had the baby, he was going to be gone for a week or 10 days, because this happened the next day after he had gone out. So again, from the hospital bed, I couldn't call, ship to shore. So when you talk about community, we had a local radio station who gave the fish news every day, and messages, he got them out to sea to the fellas, so you didn't have to call. Yeah. And so every day you would hear what came in for landings with the fish and the prices, and then he'd have messages, birthday messages, weddings, deaths, everything. And so I called him up from my hospital bed, and I said, you know, you have to get the word to Radar that he has a son.
Oh, wow.
And so he put it on the Fish News the next day, so everyone heard it. And then Radar wasn't even out of the bunk at that time. It was his time off, so he got the message.
But he
from
got
someone
the message,
else.
Exactly. Yes, yes. So let's talk about that strong sense of community that forms among fishing families, those on shore helping one another, especially when a family member's at sea, and also a sympathetic ear when things are stressful and difficult. I would imagine you have to lean on each other a lot.
That too, and we are. We are a strong community. When you're talking about communication and how it works, you couldn't always get through even. There was this terrible storm, and my husband was on his way in. And he called me and said he was on his way in and was supposed to be in around 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It was a snowstorm. Well, I didn't hear anything more. And I went out to the dock. There was nothing to see. And then it got to be 6, 7 o'clock, heard nothing, tried to call, no communication at all. I called his best friend, or our best friend. He lived in Acushnet. We live in Fairhaven, close to the dock. And he said, Ellen, do you want me to come down and try on from my boat to get to his boat? I said, could you? He said, yes, I'm going to come. This is a snowstorm from Acushnet. He came and picked me up. We went on his boat. We're trying and trying and trying, trying to call. No, no answer, no answer. I was sick. He didn't know what to say or what to do, but he tried, he came. And then he drove me home in the snowstorm. Only when I got home, the door flew open, and here is my teenage daughter, and she is crying, Mama, Dad just called. He is all right.
Oh, wow. So dramatic. And Laura, you get a lot of stories like this when we look at all the things that you've been collecting over the years.
We do. We've been collecting, oral histories and shorter stories from people in the fishing industry for the last 10 years. So we have about 110 interviews, and we've used them to create programs.
Yeah, like this one. A lot of material. We're talking about the perspective of mothers, daughters, and wives of fishermen this morning. Both historically and today, many fishing families also run businesses related to the industry, and while the husband or father is at sea, oftentimes it's the women who stay home and run the business. So you're the single parent, you're running the household, and you're running the business. And Kristen, you can relate to this. Your family runs a business with the fishing industry. Describe the challenges and rewards of being a woman in this aspect of the industry.
Well, in our case, my husband fished for 30 years, and then he came ashore and started the business. So I guess in a sense, I watched it to begin with when he was going out to sea, because to begin with, we had to make money.
Right.
And so I was kind of there. Those were the slow, slow days. But now he is, and my sons work with us. So I am not running that alone. But but there was a challenge. Even there, when he came ashore, it was very different to have him home every night.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big adjustment.
Yeah, I can imagine.
A big adjustment.
For both of you.
For both of us.
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
It really was.
Let's talk about the difficulty of having a loved one go to sea. Ellen's just talking about this, the scariness of a storm. We know fishing is a very dangerous profession. And there's this possibility that your father, your husband, your child might not come back. But before we ask you to chime in on your experience with this, let's listen to Bernice Callan. She tells how she learned months later about a very close call that her husband had out to sea.
My husband, he didn't tell me this, but he fell overboard while they were out to sea, and they picked up the net, and he was in it. They brought up the net, and he was in it. When he came home that trip, he was all black and blue, but he told me he fell on the deck. And not till months after, when we were out with some fishermen and their wives, one of the men that we were with said to him, "Boy, you had quite a boat a little while ago, didn't you, Donald?" I said, "What? What was that about?" He said, "When he fell overboard, and they brought him up in the fishing net." Now, see, those kind of things, our husbands didn't tell us because they didn't want us to be upset over it.
You're nodding your heads here. You can relate to that. And so you, a little bit earlier, Kristen, you said, well, we don't want to bother, when they get home, we don't bother them with the troubles. They're doing the same thing, coming home, not wanting to bother you. So sort of this sort of mutual respect of responsibilities, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I'm just hearing things now of things that happened when Radar was off to sea.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. I mean, he'd come home and he'd been out in hurricane force winds, and I'd say, "How was you were okay? How was the weather?" "It was a little sloppy." And I said, "Oh, a little sloppy."
But had you known that, had he told you the stories when they came home, do you think you would have felt differently about them going out on the next trip?
I don't know, because I always trusted that he was safe and knew what he was doing. You always worry, but I don't know if I would have worried any more. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Possibly, but what I learned was that I had to respect that he knew what he was doing. I had to trust him that much that he knew what he was doing. Right. That helped me when I learned.
Right. I'm sure many women have heard stories about their fathers or husbands' close calls. You aren't alone there. I want to play another piece. This one is a poem by Charlotte Enochson titled Coming In at Eight. And before we hear it, Laura, can you give us a little background on Charlotte?
Sure. Charlotte's father fished. Charlotte's brother currently is in the fishing industry. And Charlotte was, for a time, married to a fisherman. And she'll give a little bit of that intro, I think, in the piece. But she is going to be she's one of the four women who will be participating on March 8th.
This was written many years ago in real time, so we were dependent on landlines, and there wasn't a whole lot of communication going on with the guys out to sea. First, the phone rings. They're coming in at 8. She says, "Terrific. That's not too late to bring the kids along." She hangs up the phone, smiles, and tells the children, "Daddy's coming home." She has all day to spend in preparation and rushes through her chores without hesitation. Like a bride awaiting her wedding night, she wants everything to just be right. Now the trip is over. Her man is coming home. Tonight she won't have to be alone. She's not really happy with this lonely way of life, but she knew he was a fisherman when she said she'd be his wife. And his time ashore was so happy and free, she never quite resented his going to sea until the day that her mother died and she desperately needed him by her side. Like a good fishing wife, she held up well, but privately wished the whole business to hell. Now the trip is over. Her man is coming home. Tonight, she won't have to be alone. She opens a window and feels a stiff breeze, spies the darkened sky and looks toward the sea. The TV weatherman smiles gleefully. "Don't worry, folks, the storm's heading out to sea." "Oh, God, don't let it meet them," she prays, while cursing the forecaster's callous ways. Dismissing the fear she's known too many times, she gets back to work, making things shine. Because now the trip is over. Her man is coming home. Tonight, she won't have to be alone. Then a news flash catches her ear. Boat in distress is all she hears. On her way to the school for her son and daughter, the radio tells her they're taking on water. Something about the Coast Guard and high-speed winds puts her stomach in her throat and her head in a spin. Consumed with terror, she rushes for home, praying good news will come on the phone. Will it ever be over? Is he coming home? Tonight she can't stand to be alone. With friends and family standing by, she tries to be brave, tries not to cry. Then again from the radio a sound, a voice saying they've gone down. But all crewmen are reported safe, aboard a Coast Guard cutter, due in at 8. Thank God, she sighs while reaching for the phone, sobbing while saying, "Daddy's coming home."
Well, that really sums it up, doesn't it? When you think about all of it, and I noticed that when they were talking about the weatherman's forecast, "Don't worry, folks, going out to sea," both of you rolled your eyes. You can really relate to that. Kristen, you're even getting emotional just hearing that.
But I can remember talking to the television many times.
not pleasantly, I'm
no.
sure. Yeah. Laura, this is interesting because this expression through poetry, I mean, that was a very moving piece that Charlotte just said and really summed it all up, didn't it?
It did. And I think, you know, Charlotte, as many, there are quite a few people in the fishing community who write poetry about their experiences. And it's really, it's very real. You know, I mean, Charlotte actually says in a, there's a longer intro to that piece, this was written in real time. Yeah. So I think while it was going on, it was her sort of,
expressing it
and also just taking maybe a little comfort in writing.
Yeah, so true. Well, many children of fishermen go on to become fishermen, as we mentioned earlier. And Ellen, your husband, as we mentioned, was a fisherman. Your son, now your grandson. It's one thing when your husband takes on those risks. I imagine it's quite another thing when your children do it. Can you talk a little bit about being the mother and grandmother fisherman? What are you thinking when the children go out to sea? Is it the same or is it a little bit worse? What is it like for you?
It is worse. With the children and grandchildren, I worry, we pray a lot. But it also, what I did, the fight in me. My son had just become skipper, and he called home. They had engine trouble. Weather was fine, but they had engine trouble. And the Coast Guard didn't come and get him. They were lax in those days, because they took the first come first, and with just engine trouble, they weren't going to bother before 12 hours or 24, whatever it was. So here, Dad, I couldn't take. Here is my son, just become skipper, and is out on the blue with no power. I called up the Coast Guard. I told them who I was. They had heard about me. I had been around the dock. And they said, well, it wasn't an emergency, they said. So they were going to get to him. I said, when a guy that is 24 years old, out the first trip, without power, you don't call that an emergency? They went to pick him up. I got a big bouquet of flowers from the mate because that hadn't happened before.
So this is, I guess this kind of proves the point of how tough you have to be. And I guess even in hearing Charlotte's poem, it may not be a role that you want, but you have to respect. And you're sort of pushed into this position of having to be really strong and independent, right? I guess I'm going back to that sense of community. So when you're starting to crack around the edges a little bit, that's when the other families in the fishing community are probably, I would imagine, very important to you, is trying to help you, you know, be strong.
Yes. We lean on each other.
Yeah.
Because we're the fishing in the community. We are the only one that understand each other.
What you're going through.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I was going to say that somebody who we interviewed, a man, said that he, in his experience, it seems easier for a woman to marry a fisherman who's already fishing if she knows that's what she's getting into. But if she marries a man who then decides to go fishing,
right,
and she's not been part of that, that industry, that's a much harder adjustment.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say it probably would be a behoove her to speak to some of the fishing families about what she's in for, as far as what that life is.
You know,
like.
And I think for both of these women, they are, this is their
They've
whole life.
Up in
They've
it.
Grown
yeah.
up in it.
Right, exactly. Well, and we talk about separation from the spouse can be days, months. That can be really difficult, as we were talking about. Also a bit of an adjustment each time they come home, and we sort of touched on that a little bit. Both of you no longer operating autonomous, independent identities. Can you describe these periods of transition when the spouse leaves for sea and then when they come home? So we know they leave and there's this, you're taking over the family, the home and everything there, and then they're gone. You're getting used to them being gone, even though you miss them. They come back. There's this sort of readjustment, right? Transition?
Yeah, that there is, but that what you look forward to with joy that they were coming home. What was when they were supposed to go back out to sea on a Monday, and then there was bad weather and they didn't go to Monday, and they come home right before supper time and you have to make supper. Then they go down to the dock Tuesday and the same thing happened.
Oh, so, good
so then after a while, then you feel like, you got to get out so you can come back in again.
This is true. So
So, but what about that? You know, we've had fishermen on the show who've talked about that transition from being on the boat, where everything is sort of has its place, it has to, it's compact, and they get used to that sea life and that adjustment to just being on land and in the home. And now you've got other people, your family that you're thinking of. It isn't not just the captain now or whatever your job is on the boat. What is that transition like as they're going through that themselves? Does that impact you and the family, Kirsten?
The transition when they're in.
When they come back, yeah.
Because
especially when they've been gone for a long time.
Yeah, I just feel as though I think they feel like they miss out on a lot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because they don't get to the PTA meetings and they don't belong to organizations on land because they wouldn't make half the things. And then you're running and doing all this stuff while they're home, too. I think it is a big adjustment. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah.
Well, Ellen had talked, and actually I've heard your daughter, Tova, talk about feeling like she didn't know her father. You know, mm-hmm. feeling almost a little afraid of this man who was almost a stranger when he came
young.
Home.
Yeah.
You know, and you talked about was it your father or your grandfather with the voice, loud voice?
that was my father.
Yeah.
Yeah. As I told Laura, he was a fisherman and a sailor. And he was the captain of the small boats in the Seine, and there was no microphone in those days. So he had to use his voice, and in the wind of at night. So, of course, he had a high voice, and that he brought home, too. So if we had friends that didn't know him, they were scared of him because he used his voice. So...
And so he was Santa Claus, a loud Santa Claus.
He was a loud Santa Claus, yes.
So as we look to the future, much of the New England fishery is in collapse, which means many small boat fishermen are not going to make it, which also means the roles women play in the industry are also changing. What are your thoughts going forward? I know we've had a lot of people in here who've said, where we've had families like Ellen, like yours, where, the father fished, the son and the grandchildren, and others who are saying because of the difficulties and the regulations and what's happening financially, a lot of people don't want their kids to continue on in the fishing industry. What do you see going in the future?
That is what I have been fighting for. Through the council meetings, with whoever wanted to listen to us, there has been more than me. But it was that with the regulation, that they weren't supposed to support the businessman in the fishing industry, because we feel we are a people. With the fishing families, mm-hmm. and it started with limited entry. There is where the business people came in. So the fishing family has been losing ground ever since. Mm-hmm. So what the regulations are doing, I feel, is pushing the family fisher out of the fisheries. Mm-hmm. And that is too bad.
Yeah.
That is too bad.
And Laura, we're going to have a link on our website to your website. There's so much more we didn't even touch on. But you've got lots of audio and interesting things on the website.
We do.
So go to our website, capeandislands.org, and we'll have a link. And, of course, we'll have more about this year's Waterfront Festival coming up later on.
And I should say, too, that the Portholes Project, I think I said this at the beginning, but it's monthly. So each month there's a theme.
Something different. Right.
In April, the theme is sustainability. So a whole new set of programs. And you can, from the WCAI website, go to ours.
All right. Laura Orleans is folklorist and festival director. Kirsten Bendixson is a festival associate director and fisherman's wife. And Ellen Score, daughter, wife, mother, and grandmother of scallop fishermen. Thank you all for being here and sharing your stories with us.
Thank you, Mindy.
Thanks, Mindy.
Thank you.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.